welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Lau.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is the story of a small outpost far to the north of the capital city of White Oak, an outpost barely surviving the harsh winter as well as invasions from forces both known and unknown. There, a group of mercenaries, at the end of their rope, will help bring back this settlement from the edge of destruction. Not only will they have to deal with the harsh elements, but there are other far more dangerous threats out in the unforgiving cold as well. There are Algox, the bigger, more yeti-like cousins of the Enox, attacking from the mountains, lurkers flooding in from the northern sea, and rumors of machines that wander the frozen waste of their own free will. The party of mercenaries must face all these perils, and perhaps in doing so, make peace with these new races so that they can work together against even more sinister forces. So that is Frosthaven. And Frosthaven is in the news because it's taken its place as the most funded board game on Kickstarter.
Oh, applause.
But that's pretty amazing. And things just, it seems like amounts just keep going up and up. So this has dethroned Kingdom Death Monster, which was a game that is very, very miniature heavy and was in production for 4 or 5 years. So people were really worried it was never going to happen. But during the time that it was in production, they kept adding additional miniatures. They ended up with almost 12.4 million when they were all done. And Frosthaven is finished at almost 13, so 12.9 million. But this is already someone that's delivered the first version. So this is a sequel and someone that's delivered the first version of the game. Frosthaven is interesting. And maybe I talked about this last week, but the first print run was only 380,000, which, I mean, only that back then, that was a huge success on Kickstarter. Right. Then the second printing was almost 4 million. And then so I think they were probably expecting that this sequel was going to be this wildly successful.
How much is the main box, or like what would be the average pledge that somebody would put in?
There were two levels. It's like 100 for just the basics. And then there was 150, 100 and something that gave you some extras as far as like a solo scenario, I believe. Yep. And then they'd also worked with a Broken Token to do, because one of the big issues with Gloomhaven, the original Gloomhaven, is that it's hard to store and hard to get back in the box. There's so many pieces and you need to kind of save the state of the game because it's a campaign. And so Broken Token, who does like laser cut wooden inserts and things, worked with this Kickstarter so that you could actually order those with your box. So you can get the box of Frosthaven and then have the organizers already shipping with it. Between 100 and 250, maybe, if you went all in with like everything that they offered. It's pretty formidable, but not quite to the extent that Kaman does. So Kaman had, at the same time, Ankh, the Gods of Egypt, going. And they only raised about 2 million for that, but they get really slippery. Originally, when they launched the Kickstarter, it's a $100 only pledge, and then there's a retail pledge. Mm-hmm. But then as it continues on, they start adding another, then there's an all-in, and then there's all these things that you buy in. So you're in for about $400 or $500 all in plus shipping with a Kaman game, one of their big releases. And so this is much more reasonable, and you get a game that's hours, like probably literally hundreds of hours, if depending on every variation that you play.
Right. I'm wondering if the board game market, and I don't know, in a collector's bubble, like the comic book market was in about the early 90s, mid 90s, where people are buying stuff and like to collect, to have. Not necessarily like in the comic book market where they're going, hey, I'm going to put my kids through college selling my comics. Hey, haha, that didn't happen. But they just want to have it and put it on their shelves. And I wonder how many of these board games are really hitting the table.
Oh, no, that's a good point.
Yeah. And you saying like, oh, it's hundreds of hours of gameplay. I mean, are people actually going to get their $400 worth of gameplay?
You'd have to have a dedicated group that then just adopted this as their weekly game to really get through, because it is, it's a considerable campaign and there's a lot of additions. Like the Kickstarter actually, you know, opened up a lot of stuff. So, and I think that's a good point though, because with so much that's included, I would guess that there are people that haven't even opened everything that came with a pledge, you know, with a full, like all in pledge for some of these games, because they seem to just add stuff and it changes the mechanics of the game. And sometimes it unbalances stuff. It's maybe not as well play tested because they just add it for more stuff.
Right.
And I'm curious, and I think you're right. We kind of are in a bubble because of Kickstarter and because of manufacturing in China, and stuff might have changed since then.
Yeah,
I'll be curious if the delivery of Frosthaven is going to be how it's going to be affected by this. It was interesting timing that this happened, right, you know, as like kind of world lockdown and announcements of limited production and everything.
And I'm not condemning the people that collect. I'm a collector too. I couldn't do the board game collecting, even though I had a brief period, just because of space. And it's easier to collect the role-playing game that's just going to sit on your shelf right. than it is to collect. And periodically, I mean, you'll pull it off the shelf and sit there and read a bit of it, you know, or something like that. But yeah, it's harder with a board game.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, ah, okay, I got to move all these pieces just to look at what, I don't know, the rule book. I don't know.
Yeah. And there was kind of for a while, there was a standard size of board game. And they kind of agreed on that squarish box for a while. And now it's just all over the place, you know, depending on what the components and the demands are.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And just getting bigger and bigger. Yeah.
Right. Speaking of Kickstarter, so this is a big success for Kickstarter because they're going to get a percent of that. But they just announced, so there were, they had talked about a 35% decrease in projects being offered in the first quarter of 2020. And now they've officially announced that there will be layoffs of up to 45% of the employees. So that's pretty close to half. I mean, that's a little scary. So
is it 45%?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what they confirmed. They said 35% decrease in actual active projects and then 45%.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So we know that this is official because it was made public by the OPEIU, which is the union that Kickstarter employees successfully joined in February. So that's also a little bit suspicious. There's going to be these sweeping layoffs just as one of the first new tech companies unionizes for the first time. So that's a little frustrating. I mean, it's definitely related to the worldwide slowdown, but at the same time, they just unionized and now half of those union members are going to be laid off.
I suppose that's surprising, but not really.
Mm.
I mean, Kickstarter was an amazing success and it was like the Kleenex of a genericized brand name. You know, you don't say like a crowdfunding, you say Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah.
That's you know, true. Yeah, like Indiegogo, I've been hearing things more on the comic book side, but Indiegogo, I think, is more open, so people are more easily able to get their projects on there, and they don't have like a low threshold or something like that, so that's certainly good for the smaller projects.
Right. Yeah, and now that the idea of crowdfunding is kind of, you know, common, it's not mysterious, it's not this really new thing. I think some companies and some individuals can just privately crowdfund. You know, they can set up a very similar system where they allow people to pledge, and if they reach a certain amount, they can basically do everything that Kickstarter is doing just through their own, you know, online presence. I think that will change things because I think people trust that now that they get the idea. So what have you been up to as far as gaming and everything during our lockdown?
Well, I ordered something from, a regular online store, not a crowdfunder.
Oh, nice.
Miniatures Market. They came in and said, I started doing like an order for them and then I kind of left the cart and then they went, hey, we'll give you 5% if you finish the order in 2 days. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So I ended up getting something from BattleTech and Battlestar Galactica. It's a Battlestar Galactica game. It's like X-Wing.
Oh, nice. Like a miniatures game. Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So you get like two Vipers and two Cylon Raiders. It's the newer Battlestar Galactica. I love Battlestar Galactica, both the old and the new. So I thought, you know, this is the only place I've seen this game.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely want to get that.
Nice.
Yeah. But we'll have to give it a go.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Other than that, the only game I got going on is AD&D online.
Oh, through Discord.
So I played that the other day, and we're at a very crucial moment in the adventure.
Nice.
So this will be a very exciting start next one.
Oh, excellent. Oh, that's great.
We got invaded in the middle of the night, so I don't have any armor.
Oh.
Right. So I couldn't put it on. So I guess I'm not naked. I don't sleep in the nude, but yeah, it's pretty precarious. Well, we'll see. You played a Discord game recently, right?
I did. It was May the 4th, the Lith being Star Wars holiday. So Alan invited me to an Edge of the Empire game, the Fantasy Flight Mystery Dice system. I guess it's basically the early versions of Genesis. So I get a chance to play on Discord. And I thought it would be fine. And they have the, you know, the bots for dice rolling. And we have like a whiteboard on Google Docs to like throw images and stuff on to kind of show where people are and kind of use tokens the same way that like Roll20 would.
Okay.
But as far as the communication, there's a lot of silence. And we play really late into the night. So at a certain point, it was like, is everybody asleep? What's exactly going on? Because we get to points where there'd be decisions or thinking or rules checking, and it would just be dead for a while. Yeah, I wasn't as excited about Discord, as gaming on Discord, as I thought, because a lot of people are talking about that's what they're doing right now, and it wasn't as enjoyable. And plus, everyone had a kind of different connection. You could tell some people had really nice microphone connections. They were very clear. And then other people had to switch back and forth between phone and internet and having connection problems. So you get a real big variety of sound quality too. So it's hard to hear sometimes, or hard to listen to a lot of discussion.
Yeah. We've had cases where people have to drop out and drop back in.
Mm-hmm.
because their mic goes off and that. And it's certain people in particular. We don't play until 3 a.m.
Yeah, right.
So we don't have that issue. We don't use a camera. I guess you can now use a camera on Discord.
Oh, cool.
There is that option.
Yes.
And when we started, they play in person, mm-hmm. but then the Corona thing hit just before I joined. So my first session, everything was online. Uh-huh. So they had played for over a year together.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
That probably helped as far as the communication, like people weren't dropping off and people knew each other. But before we did, I said, I don't particularly like using a webcam, but I recommend doing it when we role play because people will be more engaged.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's a good point.
But if it's voice only, I can see people when the spotlight's not on them or whatever, they just naturally get distracted mm-hmm. because you don't really have much to focus on except for the audio.
Right.
So,
No, that's true. Yeah, I was hoping, I mean, I think there's an amazing amount of bots and things that they've created for just about every dice system and everything you can generate, any sort of polyhedral dice or anything can be rolled or in that chat interface. So I think that's really nice. I was hoping it's going to be a little bit more seamless because I've done a lot of, freelance work and stuff dealing with Skype and always hate that and hate the inconsistency of it, having to sit and listen to long meetings and things on Skype. That felt very similar to Discord. Oh, one thing I wanted to ask you about. So yeah, you were a new character invited into like an ongoing campaign. How was the introduction of your character? Did you feel it worked well and it went kind of smoothly, or how was that?
Coincidentally, they needed a cleric. Mm-hmm. So they had posted help wanted. We need a cleric. And they were doing it for an NPC cleric. And then I joined and I say, oh, what do you guys need? And I was like, well, play what you want, but we really need a cleric. And I'm like, okay, I'll be a cleric. I don't have any problems.
Oh, that sounds smooth.
So it kind of just showed up and I said, oh, I hear you need a cleric, you know?
Nice.
You know, the tavern master says you need a cleric and they're like, ah, okay. And of course they're a good party and I happen to be a good cleric. So,
oh, good, good. Yeah.
So it worked out. Interesting though, because the dungeon master is playing it. Hey, I want to play this by the book. And that's part of the experience and the appeal of this mm-hmm. game. So I join and it's not like, okay, yeah, everybody's about level 3 or 4. So, hey, you just start at level 3. It was like, okay, you're doing a new character. You're level 1. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
So, but it's kind of fun. Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, that's fair because mm-hmm. getting that experience, but then it's very much a departure from modern style where everybody's balanced. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, everybody can contribute to this thing. And by everybody can contribute, somehow it means everybody's got to be not the same, but everybody's got to be at the same ability level and stuff. Yeah. So it's not like that. I mean, we randomly rolled our dice and I'm coming in at level 1. And in this last combat, I'm like, you know, I'll just toss the oil into the bad guys. You know, that'll be my role. Whereas we have much more capable fighters. But yeah, it's not a problem. And, you know, of course you're level 1 and they're level 3, but it's not like it's a rank. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's not like people treat you as like, okay, you've got a level 1 voice, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
In this decision making, it's just like everybody's equal, but you're just less capable. But because, you know, maybe because I'm the only cleric, then I guess you're less capable, but then you still have a pretty clear role within the party. So I don't know, it's kind of nice because I haven't had that experience in a long time. I've always, even as a game master, been like, hey, everybody, okay, you're gonna join, everybody's third level, so hey, you be third level too. Mm-hmm. Hey, because right. Everybody be happy kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm giving out experience. You all get the same. Yay! So kind of thing. And I you know, I like doing that and like receiving that. But I also like having this old school imbalance. You know, imbalance is part of, you know, just the, you know, not everybody's equal kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And that is definitely, that's got a nice old school flavor.
I think if I had a big complaint about online gaming, I definitely prefer in-person gaming. But one thing that maybe people might not factor in is that if you are like married and you have kids or something like that, I mean, you have other obligations, mm-hmm. right? That we have to schedule stuff. And if you're out of the house, like you're gone.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You're doing your thing. And, you know, if you're in the house doing something that, and people might be finding this with teleworking and stuff like that. You're in the house and you write down on the calendar, you know, from 1 to 5 where I'm playing a game. But, you know, it's hard for your kids to accept that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So they'll kind of run in and stuff like that. And then also that 5 o'clock, I think, becomes more rigid.
Yes, that's true.
Because you're right there. Why? I mean, if you're running late because, you know, you're taking trains or, you got to drive and mm-hmm. stuff like that. It's more understandable, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like I was getting a problem, but it's definitely like when 5 o'clock rolls around, I was like, I mean, one of the reasons we got a big cliffhanger is I was like, yeah, guys, I'm gonna have to make this the last round
right.
for me. Cause it was like, you know, I know like supper's, you know, supper's being cooked. You can smell it. And you're like, ah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's
out of sight, out of mind is definitely preferable. And I'm actually really looking forward to meeting. I've only met one of these people in person. So I'm looking forward to meeting the rest of the crew.
Oh, that's good.
In person.
So anything come up in the news? Anything catch your eye as far as tabletop gaming?
Oh, yeah. Another big news. Yeah. The Ray Winninger is heading the D&D team. And he's a pretty big name. Mm-hmm. But I did see some people go, like, you know, if you've been a top 10 designers, RPG designers of all time, he very much has a case to be in that 10.
Oh, nice.
I'm definitely biased because he was involved in creating Torg, mm-hmm. which would be, you know, in my top 5 games of all time, and DC Heroes, which would be another top 5 game
oh, wow.
of all time for me. So, and I bought his Underground, mm-hmm. which came out around about the time when comics got really dark.
Mm.
Martial Law, which was one of the early comics. Martial Law came out a little bit after Watchmen, and it was like, it's almost like a Vietnam superhero
oh, wow.
world mm-hmm. where they create super soldiers to actually go out and fight in these wars, and then they come back all maladjusted. They don't come back like Captain America.
Right.
Yeah, I really like Martial Law, and then this came out, and I was like, oh gosh, the person who helped create DC Heroes is writing like a Martial Law game, so I bought that. He's also worked on D&D and other things like that.
Oh, cool.
And then I guess he dropped out to work for Microsoft for a while, and now he's doing Mac Merrill's job.
Oh, all right. So do you think that's going to have an effect on D&D? Do you think it's going to change any directions or kind of tones of things?
I don't know for sure, but I do notice that for every edition, they seem to have a different lead.
Mm.
So, I mean, you look at third edition, you had, what, Jonathan Tweet, Monte Cook, I believe. For fourth, you had, like, Ron Heinzo as one of the leads. Fifth was Mike Merrill's. So he comes in. And yet part of the reason why he's coming in is not entirely signaling a new edition, because there was a problem with, I think Mike Merrill's got transferred to another section.
Oh, okay.
Because of issues with that Zach S is his name.
Ah, mm-hmm.
Obviously it's not his birth name, but whatever he goes right, by. But right. yeah, just in the creation of 5e, and there were some allegations of harassment. People are unhappy that Mike Merrill's, or with how he handled that.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how much of it is true, but I guess Wizards of the Coast or Hasbro said, okay, you can move to the... And this happened over a year ago that he got transferred and they didn't make an announcement, but he started popping up when they were talking about the Baldur's Gate computer game. And that's because he went over to like something like the franchise, the D&D franchise director or something is his new title or something.
Oh, I see.
But then I kind of look at... I mean, I don't know why they just transferred him to another section. But one reason could be they were like, hey, you know, you did good work for us. We're not going to dismiss somebody who's done good work for us, right?
Right.
That we think that would be, you know, betraying you. And maybe, you know, what's the rest of the team going to think? It's just like, hey, people complained about you. You're gone.
That's true. I think for companies, that has to be a difficult line to walk, because if you just fire somebody straight off, that encourages kind of Twitter mobs and social justice to really, you know, start digging and going after people they decide that they don't like. And then you're also alienating like the other half of your customer base, or maybe the actual people that are playing the games. And if they have a favorite designer, or, you know, someone that they've enjoyed the product while they were the head of it, that's, I think that is a bit discouraging for customers and demoralizing for the staff.
Yeah. I mean, Wizards of the Coast used to have a pretty cutthroat reputation. Like people would get, and this might've carried over from TSR, but where people would get like the Christmas layoffs were pretty common.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they would have a big project and they would get the people they need for the project and they're like, okay, you're gone. Wizards, you know, great company, not great company. I don't really know, but they seem to be doing a much better job of managing their team where they don't have mm-hmm. to keep shrinking and expanding it per project.
Right. Right.
And I mean, job security is a good thing. Any company that can offer job security.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can take an issue about this particular person, but I think they're looking at somebody who was like, wow, 5e is as successful or more successful than any other than first edition. So he's done well for us. So we should do well for him.
Mm, yeah, good point.
So people be excited. Yeah.
yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there's any kind of change of direction or tone or anything that happens, and how soon they're going to do a new edition. I wonder if they're a little bit superstitious now, because I've had so much success with 5e that, you know, they could pull another 4e with 6e and kill their player base.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if they kill the player base, it's not going to be rules related.
Ah, yeah,
right. It's going to be committing too much to one side or the other. Somebody posted about, hey, does this mean we're going to see like a Marvel superheroes and that? Because I don't know if he worked on Marvel superheroes, but he did do DC superheroes, and he seems to be really interested in superhero stuff. So
yeah, very cool.
I mean, if he did something, even if it didn't have a recognizable IP. Mm-hmm. Like DC or Marvel attached to it, I would certainly snap it up.
Oh yeah,
because I think it would do a good job with the system, and it would be pretty fun.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I'd love to see a new kind of superhero with a modern system. A superhero game. Well, speaking of tabletop news, there is a new show coming to, I guess, streaming. It wasn't announced as a platform, so I'm assuming it's going to be another Twitch or, you know, YouTube or streaming related product. And this show is hosted by Mika Burton and Matthew Mercer, and it's called Critter Hug. I couldn't resist talking about this just because of the name. So Critter Hug.
Sorry, Matt Mercer and who?
Mika Burton.
Okay.
I thought this is an interesting approach. And I guess because they can't get together and do gaming sessions, they're going to do a show like this. And it showed the promotional image was two people in the same room. So I'm not sure. Maybe they're 2 meters apart in chairs, but I'm not quite sure. But Critter Hug is a show celebrating just a few of the hardworking folks that bring the joy to the tabletop industry. It'll highlight local game shops across the country, new games, people of note in the industry, and more. You might find your new favorite RPG, another cool, friendly local game store, or meet a brand new creative that are putting a fresh spin on minis, maps, and gaming gear. This sounds like it could just be, hey, pay us money and we'll plug your stuff. But they're making it sound friendly. But I don't know, how exactly do you promote a local gaming shop when it's a local gaming shop in Rhode Island and you live in, you know, California? Like, that's completely
Zoom.
Meaningless.
I don't know.
Yeah, all right. But that's completely...
Why don't you take your laptop around the store? Yeah. Is this connected to that thing they did with they had a problem with their fireplace?
Oh, there was, yeah, right. There was, yeah.
Is that a Critter Hug? Oh, okay.
That was something they did, yeah, during the lockdown here, as they've done, yeah, there was a fight, something caught on fire while they were, I think they were just doing kind of an update, like a fireside chat thing, and.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but this is going to be a new show. I'm a little suspicious because they've had so much sponsorship lately. They did a Doom, you know, RPG, and then, of course, they did the Wendy's RPG, and they did a lot of stuff that was just paid, like just, you know, payola, cash in hand, you know, talk about our product. So if they're going to be plugging new systems and local hobby shops and different things happening in the industry, it's going to be pay us. We have a huge audience and we'll talk about it. So I'm a little cynical about it. And I think the title of the show, Critter Hug, deserves a little cynicism.
Yeah, you just dropped the name on me and I just like, I don't even want to Google this.
Right.
Critter Hug. I'm just like, I don't, whatever. Yeah.
You don't need that in your history.
It doesn't sound like... I mean, it certainly doesn't, I guess it matches what they were doing because they're going to be hugging these gaming. Oh my God. I don't know.
Right.
Whatever. Okay. I think that fits their fan base though.
Yes. Oh, I think it does. Yeah.
They're very, I don't know. I'm not even going to finish the sentence, but yeah. It fits the fan base.
Yeah. And I think that it will do some good to some parts, and especially if they're going to pay them to promote stuff. But they have a huge reach and they have people that want to play tabletop games. So if they are talking about new things, spotlighting creators and different products and things, that's going to do a lot for the industry. It's going to get things sold and things are going to be made popular more than they ever would have, especially, you know, if it's an independent thing, if it's like a, you know, Powered by the Apocalypse or something that is good, but hasn't really gotten a lot of focus. So it will have a positive effect, but as always, I have a little cynical reaction to anything they do just because it doesn't feel very honest. I never feel like they're just, you know, taking advantage of that audience, that reach to pay some bills.
I don't disagree. I mean, maybe it's just because they seem to be different from me, like different people. And sometimes you're like, oh, you know, it's, you know, I'm getting a cavity, you know, reading this tweet. But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to question somebody's sincerity. They're certainly different, and it's certainly the fans, the critters. Like I just wouldn't want to be involved. I wouldn't want to be a fan of someone who called me a critter. I guess, and I wouldn't want to watch something called Critical Hug.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Critter Hug. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's just, yeah. Mm-hmm. More power to them. I think the payola thing might be really, if they start just rolling out, like you said, like a Doom or a Wendy's, like companies with money,
mm-hmm.
then people are going to go, where are the independent stuff?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which they could have payola, you know, one payola, two indies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any gaming store is really going to have the money to pay them anything significant. True. So, I mean, those will be bones thrown
mm-hmm.
To that. I'm curious, like, though, if games will take off, because they've always been attached to the biggest game,
mm.
and mm-hmm. people go, oh, you know, a lot of D&D's current success is related to them,
mm-hmm.
or is
mm-hmm.
because of them, and that, okay, fair enough, maybe it is, and it got a lot of people involved in D&D, but then you hear a lot of complaints, and they're not doing anything else, they're just doing D&D.
Right.
So I think if somebody has the numbers, looking at Monster Hearts, because they had that showcase or some sort of tutorial for Monster Hearts.
Yeah, right.
Which, of course, polarized people. right. But it seemed, did that actually help Monster Hearts in any significant way? Yeah, it might give it a bump, but is it going to give it a significant bump?
Right.
And then if it's not going to give a significant bump, then you're going to look at like mid-tier companies going, yeah, is it worth it? You know,
yeah,
are they going to play Torg and people are going to, you know, especially if they play it badly or they don't understand, they don't take the time to learn the system or whatever, or they...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's already a lot of podcasts out there where somebody holds up a book and goes, hey, I really recommend this. I give it eight out of 10 because of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do that. I'm like,
yeah.
And hey, yeah, whatever. They're copying us. Hey, we're hugging people all the time. We just don't have
exactly.
any money.
That's what the hands are so red for all the back patting during our hugs.
All the chapped. They're so chapped. And your weekly hug series. I mean, you've been hugging the heck out of those Kickstarter projects. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
what they might do is, hey, this Critter Hug is sponsored by blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but they have to walk such a line because their critters are so sensitive. It's like, well,
yeah.
You know, like Wendy's, don't you know that they don't buy their tomatoes from the that co-op in Florida? Yeah.
Well, as part of our spotlight on new games that you should take a look at, there was something that I wanted to bring up this week. It was a game that was kickstarted in 2018, and then it became just recently a deal of the day on DriveThruRPG. And during the lockdown, I've just been grabbing up things that look interesting just for stuff to read and to kind of get inspired by new systems and new settings. So this game is called Never Going Home. And it was inspired by the World War I occult art of Charles Ferguson Avery. So it's published by Wet Ink Games. And it's a kind of weird World War I game, or like an occult setting for World War I. Mm-hmm. So the art itself kind of tells you a lot about what to expect. Basically, it's a game that's a D6 engine that had plus one system. And it's so you're rolling D6s, pools of D6s, and five or a six on the dice are a success. And then there are things you can do before the roll and after the roll, as far as like spending attribute points and things to manipulate the rolls for greater chances of success. So that sounded nice because it reminded me of the Year Zero engine. And then there was another element that they added that works really well. I think thematically it works really well. A deck of cards is used. And so you hold a hand of cards, and those are used for initiative, but they also represent not only the character's memories, like their connection to their life and their real world, like their memories of their family or things like that, but they're also used, you can sacrifice them to either power the magic system, which are known as whispers, or to gain experience. So they're played to decide initiative order, but then there's also other things that they power. But the suits of the playing cards, so you just use a regular deck of playing cards, and the different suits represent different types of memories. That combination seemed to work really well. So basically what you are is you're soldiers in World War I, and it looks like British soldiers. From most of the art, it looks like British soldiers, and you've run across this corrupting force. So how they describe it is something happened that thinned the veil between this world and the world of the others. Soon after came the whispers, and from just behind a soldier's ear, voices told him how they could win. Some resisted, and the others drove them mad. Some accepted their instructions and sold their humanity for arcane powers. Strange enemies now stalk the battlefield, and many soldiers have become twisted parodies of their past self. So along with the D6 mechanism and the playing cards, there's also a corruption mechanism. So you can gain more powerful abilities and power what they call the whispers, the dark magic, by taking on corruption and kind of sacrificing your humanity. But you can get to a point where you're lost. So the title Never Going Home is related to, you know, either dying or being corrupted and kind of passing over to this, you know, world of the others and, you know, becoming a demon or becoming a corruption. Really nice theme and nice tone. So I thought it's something that we might want to try out.
Well, you did a really good pitch. That sounds really good. And I mean,
okay.
The Whispers, that sounds like a really cool name. Take note, Critter mm-hmm. Hugs, as far as naming something for a magic system. As soon as you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, I want to do that. And sorry, what was the artist's name again?
Charles Ferguson Avery.
Charles Ferguson Avery. Yeah, yes. We'll try to post some, with credit, of course, some of his art on our Twitter so people can see that.
Yeah, I can even, probably the thumbnail of this will be some of his work.
Oh,
so
great.
It's line ink work with some washes and toning, but it's a really great combination of World War I uniforms and gas masks, and then kind of occult imagery and staffs and scarring. I think you literally have to like scar your skin, like kind of blood magic. So there's a lot of,
nice.
It's nice.
And I like that they didn't just slap Cthulhu.
Yes, exactly.
In the title and just go Cthulhu World War I or something like that. And it's just like, oh, okay. It sounds like they're actually making their own game. Mm-hmm. And then they can have something like corruption. So it's like, hey, you don't like insanity? Okay, great.
Yes.
But we're not doing Call of Cthulhu. We're doing our own mm-hmm. game. Okay, great.
Yeah.
No, that sounds really good. Yeah, I'd be interested in trying that.
And there was a real specific mention that they wanted to, in using this setting, remain respectful to the people that gave their lives and the veterans, you know, of that war, to not be making fun of it, not be making it a playground, but having it have some resonance.
Right,
yeah. So they specifically called attention to that, which I don't think with a lot of like weird World War II settings and things you get a lot of, they just want, you know, zombies and vampires to be Nazis. You know,
sounds like it. And I hope they do this where they don't just make the Germans like, oh, they're the evil demons. And it's like,
right.
Because people need to understand that World War I was not World War II.
Exactly.
So it's like, you know, when Wonder Woman was like kicking that German, like, yeah, kick that Nazi. And he's like, he's not a Nazi. They came after.
Right, right.
Yeah.
His children may become Nazis, but.
Yeah, funny. Exactly. Yeah, prevent him from spawning a Nazi. That was Hitler's dad. So actually, Hitler fought in World War I. I definitely want to try that. And I appreciate that they try to make it really respectful. I mean, we listen to Dan Carlin sometimes. Mm-hmm. He had has an excellent podcast on World War I.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, you know, I actually cried during that podcast. Like, wow. Yeah. And I was like sober or something. I wasn't like drunk listening to this going, you know, when you're more weepy, I was just like, I was actually sober listening to this crying. It's like,
right. You
know, what these people had to go through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he doesn't present it in a, you know, smaltzy way or with, you know, any heart wrenching music or anything behind it. It's just he just delivers the facts of the situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, certainly also recommend Dan Carlin. And yeah, no, that sounds like a good game. Never Going Home.
Never Going Home by Wet Ink.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, Wet Ink Games. So I'll put a link to that in the description so you can get your PDF. I'm not sure if you can order physical copies at this point. I think it's worth it. And there's a lot of support material for it as well. I think maybe the Kickstarter did well and supported. There were several books supporting the system.
Couple recommendations from me. One is a YouTube channel called Filmento.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do that on Twitter as well. And what he does is he takes some, like one thing from a movie that explains why it succeeded or why it failed.
Mm.
And he goes into it in a lot of detail, and he's really good. And he presents it well in an amusing way. And he's a big fan of Mission Impossible series, as am I. And he was talking about Mission Impossible Fallout, and why it was so good is because it's all about choices.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Every turn in the story is a choice that the protagonist is making or based on the choice the character makes. Mm-hmm. It's not very passive. And a movie he describes as being very passive is Rogue One.
Oh, yeah.
Where they don't really make choices. It's just like, you have to do this. Oh, okay. Yeah. So they have very passive protagonists. Mm-hmm. So there's this Belgian Netflix series, the first Belgian Netflix series ever, if you're interested in your Netflix history. Called Into the Night, based on a Polish science fiction novel.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's got a really good premise. I think it's safe to say what the premise is basically it's something, they've got to avoid the sun. Something's going on with the sun and they're in a passenger plane.
Oh.
You know, I thought, okay, I'll give it a shot. But it's really nice because it's, I mean, certainly it's a tough situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they've got to make a lot of choices. And I just thought, oh, you know, if you want it, I thought that could make an interesting game. It's a confined space. You got a plane, mm-hmm. but they've got to make a lot of choices. You got you know, a variety of different people, and they bring different skills, but it's a lot about, you know, different areas of knowledge that they're bringing. So I think that's good RPG inspiration.
Oh, cool.
It's something that I think could inspire some really, really compelling games.
Idle Red Hands is working on a lore series. So this is our first kind of full production lore series, and we've released the first episode. So this is the Complete Mutant Chronicles. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, please check out the first episode. The second episode is in production. So we're almost finished with the script, and we're going to be releasing that soon. Take a look at Mutant Chronicles. And if you like the lore of Mutant Chronicles, take a look at our Patreon. We have a specific pledge level for people that want to show us that they want to see more of this. And that'll help us produce, that'll help us pay for the resources. And there's a lot of production going into making of this series, so we could use all the help that we can get. Please visit outerredhands.com, and then our Patreon is patreon.com/outerredhands, and both those places will get you to help us keep that series going. So please take a look at that. And you can follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter and also Instagram. The website is the easiest way to find the podcast. So if you want to subscribe to the podcast and hear our weekly episodes, as well as special reviews and things that we're doing, and then also YouTube and Twitch, you can find Idle Red Hands. So that's it for this week. We'll be back again next week. Bye.
Bye.
The sounds of a car.